Okay, this is another series, another Tarot report or investigation in our series entitled The Laws of Life. Our question tonight is, what is the divine law of synthesis and how can aspirants best harness it? As you may recall, the law of synthesis is the first of the three major laws, them being the law of synthesis, the law of attraction and repulsion, which we spent two different sessions on, and the law of economy, the first, second, and third aspects of God. So our question is, what is the law of synthesis and how can aspirants best harness it? I've shuffled the card, I've laid out the spread, and what we have here is a wonderful spread. The starting point is the devil, right side up, number 15 or a 6. The counterpoint is the Queen of Pentacles upside down. The challenge is the Hermit upside down. Hermit is number 9 in the major arcana. The purpose is the Two of Rods, right side up. The endowment is the Magician upside down, number 1 in the major arcana. The destiny is the Knight of Pentacles upside down. The real question is the Empress, number 3 in the major arcana, right side up. The unseen forces, the King of Swords, right side up. The spiritual ideal, the Page of Swords, right side up. And the culmination is the Eight of Cups, upside down. So we have 4 major arcana. Count them, 4. The Devil, the Hermit, the Magician, and the Empress. And that is an indication that this is a pretty major heavy-duty exploration here. We have 2 swords next to each other in the Pillar of Revelation, the King and the Page. We have 1 rod being the 2 of Rods. We have 1 cup being the culmination or the fulfillment, the 8 of Cups. And we have 2 pentacles being the Queen of Pentacles and the Knight of Pentacles. We have 5 upright and 5 reverse cards. Upright cards, of course, refer to the nature of the law of synthesis, and the upside-down cards tend to refer to hints for expressing it. Although, since we're starting with the devil and that inverts everything, it's probably the other way around. let me mute here for a moment. Any comments or questions about the wrong one? Let me mute. There we go. Any comments or questions about the layout before I start the interpretation? Okay, I'm going to go ahead with the interpretation there. The nature of the law of synthesis is the first aspect of God. This deals with the principle of life, of being, the will to be, the will to exist. As they say in esoteric circles, I am that I am. This is the heart and core and essence of identity. There is nothing on the physical plane that doesn't have an inner level of identity, a spiritual level of identity. There can be distortion and perversion, but the moment you lead back towards the higher level, you discover the true essential identity. So one way of defining the law of synthesis is the law of essential identity, the essence of our sense of identity. And as the word synthesis is used in the sense of fusion, of fusing disparate elements together and creating a unity. And so I went and looked up the word fusion and found that it's based on a Latin root meaning outpouring, like the pouring of molten ore, iron ore, from a forge. And So it poses some interesting observations, and one of them is that, and this comes right to the head of things with the devil at the starting point, the devil splits everything. Now, we have negative emotional reactions to the devil, but that's just our cultural heritage. In fact, this is the is a card of manifestation, that in order for wholeness or spirit or identity to manifest in the physical or emotional or mental worlds, it has to be split. It has to be divided. It creates a duality. The wholeness, as it moves in the manifestation, becomes itself in the opposite of itself. And then, through the long process of evolution, those two parts try to reunite. And that's fusion. So what we have here is the devil splitting the male and the female, not as a sexist act or as a, even in terms of the sex of the species, but just every idea, everything that has an identity is split in two as it manifests. And then the point of evolution is to bring those two halves back and create a new whole, which fuses the outstanding elements of both parts. So there's nothing negative here. But what the devil card suggests is that everything on earth is inverted. You see, the phallus there, the flaming phallus on the right side of the card, is inverted. The fire is downward. And so everything we perceive, as I explained in my column yesterday, if we look at something and say, that's a win, from the point of view of above the mean, it's a loss. Or if we look at something and say, that's a loss, from the point of view above the mean, that's a win. See, it's divided in half. But until you recombine that duality and create a wholeness from it, you have no idea what is really going on. Everything on earth is the inverse of what it really is in heaven. Now, eventually, we bring the issues of earth up to the level of heaven, and we bring the power of heaven down to earth, from heaven to earth, and we recombine them, reintegrate them, refuse them, and into a single whole, and then they're transformed into a new seed. So this is a dynamic part of life on earth, not just human life, but all of life. The antagonisms, the fact that you have enemies is an illusion. Time and space are illusions. The limits of time, the limits of space are illusions. Here on earth, we know how to swim, but we think that nobody can walk on water except Jesus. Well, in fact, it's within the power of all of us if we learn how to do it. Under the law of synthesis, you see. And it's a question of reuniting the fragmented, limited self with the unfragmented divine potential, which is unlimited and abstract, of the soul. And this is the process of synthesis. It's what leads us into the future. But most of the time, when we evaluate the events of life, we mislabel them. We misinterpret them to be exactly the opposite of their significance. Somebody dies. We say it's a tragedy. In fact, under the law of synthesis, one of the great functions of the law of synthesis is to withdraw life from form, which in a periodic timetable, so as to avoid being trapped permanently. Can you imagine if you were stuck in the same body for the last 25,000 years or 50,000 years? We get stagnant in our attitudes and habits. The vast majority of people stop growing, if they ever grew at all, once they turn in their middle 50s. They just get set in their habits and they are calcified and can't change. Now, if you're on the spiritual path, if you're working with active meditation and trying to grow, that doesn't limit you. You can continue to grow until you're 70, 75, 80, or whenever you die. But the point is that death is the greatest expression of benevolence and compassion in God's creation. Life would be a sorry mess if there was no death on earth. The point is that spirit never dies, but form always does. And under the law of synthesis, synthesis is the power to extract the underlying, the essential identity and return it to its level of spiritual purity and then reincarnate again and again and again. And it's sad that human attitudes about death are so perverse. But like I started off by saying, the reason why we start with the devil is that everything on earth is inverted from what it is, actually is in its essence. So we think, we try to cling to life. We go through conniptions trying to figure out how to pay for all this expensive health care. You know, there was no health insurance before 1940, and it wasn't really a regular practice until 1960, 1970. And yet, somehow for hundreds of thousands of years, humanity managed to survive and keep on expanding and growing and developing and cultivating civilization without health care, without health care insurance, and even without much health care. And the sad thing is that health care insurance is based on the idea that everybody wants to resist the inevitable end of death with all their might and vigor. Well, that's not life. That, from the point of view of a life above the mean, life on earth is death. The true life is life above the mean. So this is why I say the devil represents the inversion of reality. The inversion. Everything is split. Everything is limited. Everything is cut estranged from its source. We are stuck in a trap of time and space. But because of the law of synthesis, we have the power to abstract. And we don't have to wait for physical death to do that. We can harness the power to abstract right away, right now in our lives, by using it to detach and to transcend the limits and barriers. We can free ourselves. So the our best use of this law of synthesis is to make it a central principle of our life to join together anything that has been divided. If you're alienated from God, if you're alienated from friends, if you're alienated from your family, don't waste any time working to synthesize them, to reintegrate. And understand that in this card of the devil, there is the devil with the skull and the bat wings and the naked man and woman split and turning their backs on each other, going their separate ways. But underneath that is the fire. Now, the average person would say, well, that's the fire of hell. No, it's the fire of heaven. The law of synthesis is the fire of will. And it's pure, it's whole, it's united, it's one. It's the fire of the mind, if you wish. And so we have to understand that this is an active, dynamic, divine principle. The devil seems to split us into dualities. And this is why there's so much confusion in the world. If you take the word confusion and split it into con and fusion, con means the opposite of, or that which opposes, and fusion is synthesis. So Confusion is the lack of synthesis. It's what opposes it. And so anything we can do in our life, in a relationship, in our work, in healing the nation, whatever it is, wherever there's a schism, a split, an estrangement, we use our tools of integration and resonance to heal that gap. And of course, the dynamic expression of this is the effort of the little self to integrate with the capital S self, the soul, and then with the selfhood of spirit. And one way the Tibetan puts this, the work of synthesis is to integrate the self with the self and then with the all self. The all self being a larger dynamic cosmic principle. This is not just the law of the planet Earth. It's not just the divine law of the solar system. It's a law that takes you right up to headquarters on Sirius. And if the truth be known, if you could actually imagine this or embrace it, it would take you, this is a law that characterizes all of life throughout the Milky Way. And that's fairly extensive. So we start with the devil. Now, lest you have still some lingering concerns about this, notice that when we get over to the King of Swords and the Page of Swords, these are both cards of spirit, being swords. And if you look at the shield of the King of Swords, there's that chevron pattern, which indicates conflict which has been healed. And the Page of Swords, his whole arm, has that chevron pattern. And so we have the idea that spirit heals and integrates the conflict, the division, the estrangement. And in fact, the King of Swords, his crown is emblazoned right above the conflict. So he has expressed his authority, he has used his authority to bring together the pairs of opposites and unify them. So this is the tremendous dynamic quality of the law of synthesis, is that it creates unity out of disunity. E pluribus unum. Out of the many comes one. That is a motto which is not just of importance to America as a nation. It obviously links the nation to the power of the law of synthesis. Because that's what the law of synthesis does. It produces wholeness out of diverse parts. All right, let's go on then and talk about the counterpoint, which is the Queen of Pentacles. The Queen of Pentacles, the major factor here is the robe, which is of ermine or something, very elegant. And this card always reminds me of the phrase we used in our essays, in the Art of Living and the Life of Spirit, the seamless robe. The robe that is created perfectly out of a whole piece of cloth or fur or whatever, and therefore has no seams. It represents the perfection of heaven. So our work is to make the tie between the little self, the personality, and the bigger self, the real self, the soul, as seamless as possible. Now, as we pursue the work of building the Anacharana, this happens. But what many people don't understand is they still think of God up there and me down here. And so they even in dealing with the soul is a distant companion, not a real intimate companion that you can walk with day by day. So we have to understand that the great work of synthesis is to eliminate those seams, eliminate any distance between ourself and God, between ourself and spirit. And that means that we should, every day should be a communion, an intimate communion interaction between ourself and and our higher intelligence, between ourself and our higher love, between ourself and peace, between ourself and the spiritual will. And it should not be a staccato kind of thing where you ask for help and you pause and eventually help comes in. It should be a seamless activity where you are constantly invoking God, but also blessing God and expressing gratitude for having received the glories and benefits of divine life. And these become seamless. The example of the Christ in the as he's talking about his disciples just before he's to be arrested. He's in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he talks to his father and says, thank you, Father, for the opportunity to teach these disciples of mine, bless them, give them the strength and the insight and the wisdom that I know to be part of your being. And it's a perfect demonstration. If you read it slowly and carefully, you see that it's he talks about God, and then he talks about God's blessing on earth and the revelation of the truth and the wisdom and so on. It's a dialogue in his mind. And it's a brilliant example of how we are meant to interact with the divine life. As we do this interaction and strive to create the seamless robe so there's an ongoing flow of divine energy into our life, we are constantly creating the seeds of the future. One of the great dynamic aspects of the law of synthesis is it predicts the future. How does it predict the future? It predicts the future because you're creating the seeds that will bear fruit in the next season, or 10 seasons from now, or 10 lifetimes from now. And so when the Christ says, and this happens if you long to succumb to temptation, you're creating the seeds of that temptation becoming a reality. If you mistreat other people, or embrace corrupting values, you're sowing the seeds for the future. So you can sow seeds of beauty and grace and truth, or you can sow seeds of lies and deception and negativity. And whatever you sow, you're predicting the future. That's the law of synthesis, because it's the human mind that is the synthesizing force. At the level of the divine, it's the divine mind that's the synthesizing force, exercising the will of God, divine will. All right, so much for the starting point and the counterpoint. We now come to the challenge, which is the Hermit, number 9 in the Major Arcana. The Hermit we see from behind, and he's got a lamp, and there's all this structure in the background, kind of like triangles, identical to the structure that we see on the tabletop of the magician. These are archetypal patterns. This is the basic structure of the divine plan. The Hermit is searching for truth. He also has this sleepy time cap on, and that reminds us that the law of synthesis, or suggests to us that the law of synthesis, is also the law that governs the pralaya, or sleep. Every night when we fall asleep, we rejoin in the higher self, to whatever degree we make contact, and we're recharged and filled with ideas which we may or may not recognize. And there's an opportunity for healing and blessing and organizing everything. Also, when we die, we, of course, return to our source. The experiences that we've gained through a busy life are withdrawn and brought to spirit. And the process, the magnificent process of synthesizing new seeds begins. So when you are searching for inspiration or creative power, insight, it's no more complicated than realizing that you can place your order with what we refer to as the great unconscious. It's only unconscious because we're not conscious of it. It's conscious to God and to those beings, human beings, who have perfected themselves, the masters and the initiates. But through the law of synthesis, we have access to anything, any part of the mind of God. And beyond that, even into realms of the cosmos that lie beyond the scope of the solar system. So what we need is illumination, our own individualized light, the light of the mind, and then we can go searching. We can research what the roots of our current problems are, because our current problems were predicted by our previous indiscretions and triumphs. We can figure out if we make a decision such and such today, what kind of fruit will it bear 10 years from now, 10 lifetimes from now. We can check all these things out. And so the law of synthesis governs the conscious return to the source, to the harnessing of divine will. And this is a tremendous power. Anybody that has a mind is capable of training the mind to be able to think in these ways and let the mind be a vessel through which the inflowing fusion of intelligence, light, and love pours. All right, so then we come down to the fourth card, the purpose, and we have the Two of Rods. The Two of Rods we've seen many times. In fact, the last time we saw this was in the spread on the law of expanding return, expansive returns, expansive response, I think it is. Anyway, the Two of Rods is a fellow holding a globe and has two rods. And this is, again, the principle of duality, but duality that has been harmonized. So this is the one card of the mind here. And it indicates that it's the mind that achieves access to the law of synthesis, learns to draw conclusions from the facts before, and learns logic and clarity, excludes all extraneous thoughts. Now here's an idea that's very important and bold, because it's one of those right side up cards which indicates how we can cooperate with and harness the law. Many people think that they can't control the thoughts that occur to them. That's an excuse, a weak alibi for the fact that they simply don't want to take the trouble and bother to control the thoughts that pour through their mind. But part of this is, if you're going to learn to work with divine power and the ability to levitate and walk on water and all that sort of stuff, you've got to learn to hold your mind steady in the light of divine will. You can't afford to be distracted by somebody who comes to you and says, "Oh, I want to write your biography and have an affair with you." You see, you can't do that. You can do that if you're in the military. You can do that if you're in ordinary human life. But by God, if you're working with divine creative force, that can't happen. So you have to train yourself, and that would be one interpretation of what's going on in the news today is that he qualified for a higher round of training, and now everybody's making fun of him on the talk shows. But nonetheless, the point I'm making is that the mind has to be under a not a forced repression in any sense or not of that idea, but it has to be clear and lucid and an example of disciplined thought, so that we learn to repel, remember the law of repulsion, which we just did a few weeks ago, we learn to repel any kind of idea that is unsuitable for our thinking. So, as we work to make sense of life, we are learning the process in little ways of synthesizing ideas, of rejecting ideas that don't make sense, of shutting the door, slamming the door on negativity, and learning to view ideas in their wholeness, in their essential identity, not in their expressions. That's very important. As you'll remember, I'm not going to read this to you. It's one of the fables in the hourglass, but I've read it so many times. You all know it by heart, but it's the one where the person finds the bottle, and he says, oh, there's probably a note in there telling me the secret of life, and he tries to fish it out, and finally, in his frustration, he breaks the bottle and gets the note, and it says, the secret of life is the bottle is whole, which, of course, he had just broken. So this is the story of the two of rods. We have to treat everything in life as whole, complete, entire, and understand that it is the mind that is designed to synthesize confusion into meaning. And this leads us to the mind becomes a positive pole that leads us to the central life. We begin to view everything in terms of the spirit being the positive pole, and the personality being the negative, responsive, willing accomplice to that positive pole. Even among most aspirants today, it's the reverse. The personality is the positive pole, and this soul is an afterthought when it's convenient. We have to reverse that, because that's the symbolism of the devil. All right, I'm going to unmute here and see if there's any comments or questions so far.
I have a question, Carl.
Go right ahead.
What I was thinking about a while back was the saying, as above, so below. And then I was trying, is this what synthesis gives meaning to that phrase? Is that correct? That it's the reuniting of the fragmented self with the unfragmented itself? Bringing that together.
Well, as above, so below is an expression of synthesis. It doesn't define synthesis, but it's an expression of synthesis. In the sense that as you integrate the soul and the personality, obviously the soul wins. The love of the soul eliminates selfishness, self-pity, greed, all the perversions. You don't integrate the love of the soul with the negativity of the personality and have the negativity still existing. It is
right.
A total
triumph. That's what I was trying to rectify
right.
In my mind, because you were talking about, whatever you therefore that's what you're going to reap.
Right.
So somewhere the two fit together, and that's what I was trying to get to, that the absolute perfect expression is that everything below should reflect everything above or be the same as, kind of drawn together.
It's not just reflecting, but it actually becomes an opportunity for the constant outpouring or inpouring of divine life through your expression.
Right, that wasn't a very good word, but they actually are joined. It is the same, right?
Right, exactly. Which produces a transformation and releases the light within the form. Okay, any other comments or questions before I move on? Well, let's go on to the endowment, which is the magician, the first card in the major arcana. He's got the four elements there, the sword, the cup, the pentacle, and the rod. And above him, not only is there the infinity symbol floating there, representing the unlimited possibilities of spirit, but there's all these little hanging mobiles from the from heaven, which represent all the archetypal patterns of life. And so when we talk about as above, so below, as Mimi just asked, the as above is archetypal. The archetypal patterns are what is above. And we're meant to figure out what it means to express those down below. It's as simple as that. We only run into a problem when we allow our finite mind to play the devil and separate things and say, well, this has one meaning and that has a contrary meaning, when they both are representing the same archetype. Now, if you've worked with my equilateral triangle, which I know all of you have, you understand the basic method of harmonizing the dualities. That's an act of synthesis. The mind is designed to do that. So we, looking more specifically at the magician, this is the ability of an enlightened consciousness to work with all elements of life in balance, in equilibrium, to work with the mind and the emotions and the physical body and with spirit, all in equilibrium. Not with equality, because the emotions are not equal to spirit, the mind is not equal to spirit, but in equilibrium, according to plan, according to design. And so this becomes a symbol for a heavenly being, perfected beings that work at heavenly levels, the spirit of America, for example, or a spirit that governs a forest, or a company or something of this nature. And these heavenly beings work through the law of synthesis. And their job is to infuse archetypal patterns and energies into the seeds of thought that can inspire human beings and motivate angels to do their work in the garden of earth. Now, you may notice that I just used the term seeds of thought, which, of course, is the name of my series on thinking, ongoing series of books in which I explain the nature of thinking. This is the heart of the thinking process, of the development of the mind. The mind is designed to use archetypal patterns to bring inconsistencies, confusions, disparities in the physical plane together to create seeds of perfection that will eventually be able to bring the archetypal patterns into life. Notice that one of those is our sense of beauty versus our sense of the ugly or the obscene. And throughout human civilization, we've come to a fairly sublime appreciation of divine beauty. It's not perfect by any means. There's still a lot of people running around doing ugly, coarse, and vulgar things, but we have become aware of the inner essence of beauty. That's an example of synthesis in action. So this is our endowment. Our endowment is we are designed to become the magician who is able to work with all elements of life to achieve a homeostasis or an equilibrium. If you're out of balance, if you're emphasizing one thing over another, you're not the magician. You're a victim of whatever it is that you think you're directing, but it enslaves you. The alcoholic is a slave to his alcoholism. And yet eventually he will learn to overcome that and become a master of his desires and urges. We then move from the endowment to the card of destiny, to the card of future. And this is the Knight of Pentacles. And the Knight of Pentacles is very straightforward. It's an easy parable here. He's riding on his trusty steed, whatever, and you can't see any of his trusty steed except this little tuft of hair down here. So this is the abstraction of the spiritual person from the personality, which is, this is a pentacle, so we're talking the physical plane, and yet we can't see his physical steed. We can't see the body that carries him forth and forward into the future. What we have is somebody that is prepared for battle, but has liberated himself from his clinging to the form, from his physical identity. And this is one of the great powers. In fact, there are five great powers of the law of synthesis, and this card represents them all. First is abstraction, the ability to withdraw intelligence and character from the form that you've inhabited for 60, 70 years at the time of death and preserve it as a seed for the future life. The second is spiritual liberation, where he's liberated himself from the traps. He's not at the mercy of the horse. He guides the horse. And in fact, the horse has become almost unnoticeable. The third is the destruction of form. You can't see the form. It has all but disappeared. The fourth is essential unity. The law of synthesis reveals the essential unity, the unity of the essence of which you were made, going back to those archetypal patterns in the magician. And then the fifth is forward motion. He's riding a horse. He's going forward into the future. And it's the law of synthesis that allows us to do that through the succession of lifetimes called reincarnation. We wouldn't get very far if we lived 70 years and died. We would get 70 years worth of growth. But because we are, some of us have lived, maybe 400, 500 times, maybe even more, we have gotten as far as we have. We've come out of the caves. We've come out of barbarity. We've come we've been cultivating the sublime essences. We even have a sense of our identity as free men and women. And so this is an essential part of the law of synthesis. Okay, once again, let me pause and see if there's any questions before we go on to the pillar of revelation. Anybody? Well, let's sally forth then into the future, just as the Knight of Pentacles does. The Seventh card in the spread is the real question. It's the first of the Pillar of Revelation. This is the Empress. The Empress is a woman embracing whatever she's embracing, her cloak. And she's got a fiery head of a flame and a rod and the seeds, well, actually the growing wheat here that will come from the seeds. So the question is, what are we incubating? What seeds are we creating and then incubating for future growth, for future development? Our life is not a frozen frame called the present. There's a lot of nonsense about, you know, living this day and none other, and some of that's useful. But we cannot freeze the frame of time and say, this is us. Our identity is captured in the capacity to synthesize what we've learned and then turn it over and reinvest it in new activities, new ventures, new expressions. We don't remain stagnant. We don't remain who we are. We are constantly growing. And this Pillar of Revelation will reveal the growth element of the law of synthesis and how it promotes growth. So the question always is, what are we incubating? What is the nature of the life within the seed that we're planting in our life? Is it, if we make our way through life telling lies, we're planting seeds that when they grow up, somebody will come along and chop them down and throw them into the fire to burn them because they're false. Again, as the Christ said, he who sows the wind reaps the whirlwind. So what are you incubating? People, don't worry about people who lie and cheat and kill and do dastardly things in order to get what they want. They're going to get far more than they want. You don't have to do anything about it. The law of synthesis will take care of them. You don't have to make that happen. You want to be sure that you're synthesizing the best within you, always. That the lessons you're taking from life embrace and call forth the animating breath of spirit, the breath that God breathed into Adam when he created man. See? So we do this all the time. We're breathing our ambitions and our will and our desires and our plan into the events of life. We need to make sure that this is the future we want, that this is based on the archetypal patterns and designs of God. We want to breathe the will of God into our relationships, into our ethics, into our daily contact, into our inspiration. And that is not just the best we can do. It transcends the best we can do. We liberate ourselves from our smallness. We liberate ourselves from our limitations. We liberate ourselves from space and time. And we create something that will truly open up the future for us. In other words, we learn to be in the world, but not of the world. All right. Then we go on to the King of Swords, which is in the position of the unseen forces or unseen factors. This is the King of Swords. He embodies the will, the divine will, the spiritual will. He embodies divine purpose. And the message here is the divine will is always alive and well. There are many, many times in everybody's life and the life of human civilization when we think the divine will has been subjugated to the devil. Because down here in the physical plane, even though we may have the eyes to see, we sometimes forget to use them. And things look to be different than they actually are. Keep in mind, we started this tarot with the assumption that, or the statement that the devil card suggests that everything on earth that we encounter is the inverse of the way it really is. Everything. Everything in form is the inverse of the way it really is. So when Christ was crucified, that was an act in the physical plane, which was the inverse of the reality, which was that Christ conquered death. Death did not conquer the Christ conquered death. You see, that's the difference between the apparent inversion and reality. So the King of Swords is that if we're going to master this, we have to master life from a physical, from a spiritual perspective, and expect all those conflicts that seem to be embroiling us to be resolved by spiritual force. We should expect, that doesn't mean that we expect specific results, we expect new trends. Divine purpose is always alive and well, no matter how little we perceive it. Our perception means very little, except to our own well-being. This is what Elizabeth Barrett Browning was talking about in Aurora Leigh when she says, art reveals what is behind the show. Art reveals what is behind the show. So the King of Swords, the will, reveals the true meaning and purpose that we're befuddled by when we look at the way events are unfolding. And events may unfold that we think are serious mistakes because we aren't looking at this from the perspective of the will, divine life, and knowing the ultimate end result, which is good and benevolent and fulfills the plan of God. All right, then we come to the spiritual ideal. And we have the Page of Swords. The Page of Swords is, being a page is a learner, an aspirant, in the art of spirit. He is willing to do battle for the good guys, for the plan of God, the work of God. But he gets himself embroiled in all kinds of conflicts in the process of doing so. This is a card of spiritual unfoldment, that the law of synthesis serves spiritual growth. It empowers spiritual growth. It's the engine that drives spiritual growth forward, leading to new opportunities, new developments, creative breakthroughs, wonderful revelations, and so on. The aspirant, or the page here, strives to reunite that which has been divided. We go back to the devil. I linked these two cards earlier. But we go back to the devil. And the devil is the force, or the seeming force, that divides everything into yin and yang as it manifests on earth. The work of the spiritual aspirant is to yoke together, reunite the yin and the yang into a complete spiritual whole, a unity. That's our work here on earth, to reunify that which has been divided. That's why I said early on that if we have any division in our life, any separation between ourselves and the soul, between ourselves and God, between ourselves and our ethics, we should do everything we can to reunify that, to make it whole, to make it perfect. And that can be in very simple ways. If we worry, that's a wedge that divides our consciousness into suffering and fear. So we need to take steps to eliminate that worry and bring the reality back into focus with the potential. If we have any relationship, if we have any alienation at all, we need to work with whatever spiritual force will resolve that. And as many of you have discovered, Most of that work is internal. It's not external, where you go and bury the hatchet with your foe. If that's appropriate, go ahead and do it. But most of the time, it's you become aware of patterns of division and separation and schism that have been in your consciousness, your character, since you were a young child or even earlier lives. And those scars still remain as bad seeds which can tempt you into misbehavior. So you harness your spiritual force, the force of unity, the force of synthesis, to draw that to you and dissolve the separation. And again, we can study public lives and learn much about this. When somebody is caught in some breach of ethics, an affair or a betrayal or whatever it might be, that's an opportunity for them to learn. That doesn't mean that they lack self-discipline. It may be that they're learning a higher turn of the spiral of self-discipline than most of us ever even dream about. Okay, so then we come to our final card, the culmination, and this is a most powerful card. This is the Eight of Cups. The Eight is, of course, the number of the Christ in the tarot sequence. And this is a hooded monk or whoever, kind of like the hermit, I guess. Not hooded, but cloaked, robed. And he's on one side of the river, and he needs to get across, but he's got those eight cups. He's just dragging behind him, clattering like tin cans on a car of two married people who just got married. And everywhere he goes, it's clatter, clatter, clatter. And he lives in fear that the cups are going to get inverted and spill his possessions. And yet all he needs to do is cross the river and achieve the mountains of initiation. The river is the river of peace flowing through the ocean of life and bringing us. It's that sense of separation, you see. He's separate from the real life on the other side of the river. Just as we feel separated from the soul and from spirit, the monad. So it's obvious that we don't try to take the treasures of earth with us as we cross into the realm of spirit. Far from it, we bridge the gap of spirit by attuning ourselves to the divine, which is everywhere. And then we fill those cups with love and beauty and grace and harmony and all the divine treasures, all the spiritual treasures. And in the process, we discover the work of sacrifice. And it is the power to sacrifice, to make life sacred, that gets us across the river. We know that we must have spiritual perfection in order to fill those cups with spirit. And so we forego all personal considerations, all sense of me, myself, and I, to become at one with spirit. That's the act of synthesis. And it is expressed through sacrifice. Perfect actions that make life sacred. And this propels us into the future, which is simply the fulfillment of the divine plan. We abandon our own goals and plans, not that we are abandoning them, but we subsume them to the divine plan. We say, not my will, but thine be done. And in the process of thine will be done, our will is also served. And this is the ultimate element of synthesis. We, in reaching out to to open the door for the inpouring of divine will, we become the agent of that divine will, and we become a single whole in the larger life of God. Okay, I'm going to stop there and entertain comments and questions about the law of synthesis and how to use it. Anybody?
Carl?
Yes.
Could you expand maybe a little bit more? Synthesis pulling things together, but you also addressed the importance of knowing what not to synthesize, what to reject.
Well, that's... Right. That's the difference between the self and the not self, as they say in India, in the yoga tradition. We learn to discern and discriminate between the wheat and the chaff. The wheat is, and that, by the way, is part of what is in the Empress, the real question. What is the wheat and what is not? What is real and what is Memorex? I mean, chaff. So obviously, this is where we cultivate the eyes to see through an active mind, where we recognize that the truth is something we can rely upon, but if you rely upon a lie, you're as foolish as the person that tries to sow the wind. If you rely on your own desires and urges, then you're relying on something that's insubstantial. If you rely on, a good example here is the difference between providence, the source of healing and abundance and contentment in divine life, and then everybody down here under the spell of the inverted card represented by the devil, everybody thinking that their only source of real security is to have health insurance. Well, of course, if you have perfect health, you never need health insurance, and it's a waste of money. But, you know, things do happen. Even advanced people, even initiates, develop cancers, but that doesn't mean that it's not a powerful symbol of the shedding of the physical body. We should be living in a society that encourages people to view death as a friendly, benevolent activity, not as something to be afraid of. But that's an issue. That's an example of separating the wheat from the chaff. Anything that encourages people to be dependent upon other people is a form of enslavement. We have to learn to trust and rely on spirit, on the providence of God. Does that help?
It does. I have to move from the sense of abstraction to the sense of using the mind filter, and what we do synthesize redeems that which is unredeemed.
Uh-huh. Well, the process of redemption is simply lifting up what is still trapped in form and releasing it into its spiritual essence. And we have to do that first within ourselves before we can do it in any other way. Any other comments or questions? Well, very good. That's it for this session. I thank you all, and good luck with the law of synthesis.